Hey everybody, it's Norm Farrar, and of course, you know, we start off this broadcast a little bit different. Kelsey, thank you for handling pushing the button. I lost all my control. I felt like, you know, a nobody now. I couldn't even press the start button, but thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
All right. Hey everybody, it's Norm Farrar, aka the Beard Guy, and welcome to another Lunch with Norm, the rise of the micro brands. We are broadcasting to you live on Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. If you're watching this on a replay, just skip ahead. If you're on my profile page, head over to the fan page, Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy, and you'll see a lot more clips and different content, as well as the whole episodes that we've recorded in the past. Also, I just wanted to remind everybody, if you're interested in hearing some non-Amazon, non-online sales content, head over to I Know This Guy, of course, after the podcast, where I talk to some really interesting people, some people from the Amazon world, but from all over, entertainers, athletes, business people, about their ups, their downs, and everything in between. And again, that's called I Know This Guy, and it's on all podcast platforms. So, Kelsey, where are you?
Here. Hello, hey. Everyone. Happy Friday. We've already got a couple people joining us already. We have Ducks. Good morning. And hey, Victor's Ducks. Here.
Oh, Victor.
I'm here to have a multitask this lunch. Perfect.
You know, actually, he is my official button pusher. Thank you.
All right. So you know what to do. If you're watching right now, please like this video. Share it to friends. If you know someone, if you can think of someone who is interested in Amazon or e-commerce, just tag them. Why not? If you've noticed, we had a little makeover with the overlay, so I hope you guys enjoy the new.
We're not going to say anything about Facebook making us do that makeover.
Yeah. So let us know where you guys are watching from this episode. Throw them in the comments. We'd love to hear. You can follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. We are an official podcast, so either Apple, Spotify, you can find us. Just search Lunch with Norm. Marina is joining us. Hello, Marina. Hey, how are Marina. You? Okay, and that's it for me. So, yeah, I'll be leaving now.
Okay. So today we're going to be talking about Amazon's new communications policy and something that we've started to do, this policy, after listening to Hanny Mora last episode. He mentioned that in podcasts, you should summarize at the beginning. I thought that was a great idea. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to be talking about the new Amazon communications. And in this episode, you will learn what exactly buyer-seller's message, the changes have been to buyer-seller messaging, how to stay compliant with the new guidelines, and strategies to maximize your feedback and product review. So my guest today is Henson Wu. He's been engaged in the e-commerce market since 1999. Can't be as old as I am. We started in around the same time. That's wild. But he started with eBay and launched multiple private label brands on Amazon around 2014. He is currently the co-founder of Feedback Wiz and helps Amazon sellers enhance their brand reputation and profitability. So that being said, if you have any comments, please put them into the comment area. And sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, and enjoy the show. Henson, where are you?
Hey, Norm. How are you doing?
Good. How's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me on today.
Hey, no problem. Are you still in Silicon Valley?
Right now, I'm in Los Angeles, but usually I am in Silicon Valley. Yeah. But for COVID, just staying down, hanging out with some family down in LA.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we're... And they just changed the border, so I can't get across the border until November now. I got to get my cigars. Can't get
the Cubans? The Cubans, right, from Canada?
Well, no, I'll smoke anything at this point, but yeah. So, hey, why don't you tell everybody just a little bit more about your background?
Sure. So I've been, like you mentioned, I've been selling on eBay, e-commerce since I was in high school. So I am pretty old, but you know, young at heart and a lot of passion about e-commerce. And yeah, so I started in around 1998, 99 when I was in high school, just mainly selling random things, like just getting to know how eBay works, and just really found a lot of passion on, you know, just researching products and then, you know, seeing how much I can make by selling it, right? Just going through the whole process of like packaging and sending it out, communicating with buyer, things like that. And then I went to college and studied electrical computer engineering. After college, I started working in Silicon Valley, you know, high-tech firm. Worked there for 13 years. But during this whole time, you know, I kind of realized that, you know, I don't think engineering was really, I wasn't that passionate about working for a corporate. And although it was great and everything, I was always trying to do things on the side, mainly selling on eBay or starting Amazon, right? So basically 2014, started Amazon. And, you know, just that was kind of when Amazon just kind of up and running. It wasn't really, eBay was still the king back then, you know, but you could start seeing there was a trend, a shift coming. Mm-hmm. And during that time, there's a lot of opportunity because, you know, it was a different platform, different interface. But if you get a product up there, miraculously, you start getting a lot of sales, you know, and it was great because you had your own listing and there's no other people selling the same exact product as yours. So I started with doing retail arbitrage, doing wholesale, and then eventually moved to a private label. It was a little easy for me because I never really had to source my products. The products that I was selling in kitchen, in cosmetics, and clothing, I had direct access to, you know, the manufacturer here in, due to like personal connections or family. So it was really easy for me to just literally, you know, get a whole bunch of products, create a brand, send to Amazon and start selling. And then, you know, around 2015, I noticed that, hey, my business is really growing and I need like, you know, software to help me just save time, right? There's a lot of things that software can do, whether it's like crunching numbers or, you know, sending out automated messages to get more reviews. Of course, reviews is the most important thing on Amazon, one of the most important things. And, you know, everyone was looking for a way to get reviews. So I figured, okay, let's figure out like how we can, you know, get more reviews. And, you know, so, you know, back then there was a lot of people doing black hat things. And, but, you know, as a seller, I was always trying to be as compliant as possible without bending the rules too much. And with email automation, I saw, okay, well, this is a great way you can communicate with your buyers and, you know, try to ask for reviews. And during that time, you know, there was a few softwares out there, but, you know, I felt like, hey, we could definitely build something better. So I got together with my buddy Aaron's, who is our other co-founder, and we started building tools for my own store. And at some point we realized, hey, dude, we could really make something impactful in the software side for this. So we decided, hey, let's give it a shot, right? Let's see if we can create our own software company and just develop software for Amazon sellers. And come 2017, you know, we were hustling like crazy, working full time, going to sleep at 3 a.m., you know, trying to build all this stuff on the side. And then we launched our product 2017. And it was great because the stuff that we launched back then was kind of revolutionary. There wasn't any other software that had the functionalities we had. So it was kind of easy for us to kind of build some traction just by, you know, sharing it and, you know, making connections with people in the Amazon industry. And quickly people started recognizing our brand. They really liked our software. And yeah, that's kind of where we are today. So that's my background.
Yeah, it's interesting because I go to all these shows and I meet Rob Stanley. And I tell you, he is not only, I know he works with the company, but he is probably the most passionate person I've ever seen working for anybody. So you got a piece of gold there.
Oh yeah, definitely. Rob is he's great. I mean, I remember the first time I met him, when we interviewed him, we had a meetup in San Francisco, and you know, this was before he was even hired, and he was just like, oh man, I want to come out with you guys. And he was out all night, and I think we were up till like 3 a.m. and he was still talking and drinking, and his energy level was like still at a 10 since I think like 3 p.m. And we were like all like just tired. And I was like, this guy's incredible. You know, I got to get this guy on our team. You know, he just has so much passion and, you know, energy to go out there.
Right. So why don't we talk a little bit about the Amazon communication policy in general? You know, what does it cover?
So the Amazon communication policy basically covers any type of communication between the seller and the buyer, right? So technically, it's more geared towards buyer-seller messaging, I would say, since that's like the main mechanism for sellers to communicate with buyers. However, you know, you have to digest it and realize that a lot of this could cover, you know, insert cards. It could cover, you know, telephone, right? Phone calls and things like that. Any way for you to communicate with them. However, it's not very easy for Amazon to track your communication outside of buyer-seller messaging and outside of insert cards. So in general, yeah, it's usually mostly buyer-seller messaging.
Right. During our last call, we had Dima Kubrick on, and a question came up about insert cards and if people can put contact information or a QR code on an insert card. I'm just kind of curious, before we really get into this, since you've talked about insert cards, are you allowed to do that?
It's a tough question. I think there isn't too much, there isn't really anything written saying you can't. However, it's more of the intent of what you're doing, why you're putting it on there for, right? So if you're putting it on there because, you know, the seller, the buyer needs to have a way to register or use the product, right, or complete the order. If it's something necessary for them to do, then Amazon is not going to do anything about it, right? They're going to let you freely put in QR codes. But if you're using the QR code to try to divert them outside of Amazon to maybe like go to your website to buy other products or get coupon codes and things like that, and Amazon feels like the intention there is to divert them outside, you know, then you can get in trouble. And that's kind of the reason why Amazon hasn't really made insert card policies very clear, because there's different scenarios where some sellers may need to use different tactics for different reasons. However, what I usually tell sellers is, if you feel uncomfortable about doing it, or if you even feel like, you know, your intention is to try to get more business or try to get them outside Amazon so they can buy from you, then I would avoid it, just because, you know, you don't want to take that risk. So,
right. So I've got product that is also in retail. It's on Amazon. It's on my Shopify account or my Shopify site. And I put in there that, I don't know, it might be a QR code to get them over to my Shopify page to get their email address. Okay, so I'm asking them to go over and, you know, get a free bar of soap or whatever it'll be. I'm on Amazon. I might be on Walmart. I might be on all these other platforms. I guess, I mean, technically, I would think it would be against TOS to bring them over to my site, but I would be doing that insert would be into all of the packaging, not just my Amazon.
Yeah. So in that case, usually Amazon's okay with that, because your packaging is consistent through all the different channels that you're selling on, right? Now, if your insert card for Amazon looks different than the one you're selling on Walmart or your website, right, then you might have a problem there. And
that's a great point.
And I know that for a fact. I've talked to some really big supplement sellers, and if you buy supplements on Amazon, you'll notice they all have these like, hey, you know, register for a free bottle, right? Or, you know, sign up your email. And you're like, hey, how do they get away with this? This sounds like it's totally against the rules. However, these guys sell their supplements on every channel, right? And Amazon actually does, as I heard, they do test buys. So they will actually purchase your products from Walmart or from your website just to see if the messaging or the QR code or whatever it is you're using is consistent with the one you're selling on Amazon. And if it's consistent, then usually nothing will happen. That's why, you know, this kind of stuff flies. However, you know, if you're if you have something different for Amazon only to steer them away, for your other, you know, channels have a different type of message, then that's where you can get in trouble.
And I guess you can't be blatant. I've seen it where people have put it on their packaging, not an insert card, but on their outer packaging. And that's kind of throwing it in Amazon's face. And I think you could get in trouble for that. But anyways, let's talk a little bit more about the actual changes. There have been some changes over the last few weeks. Can you tell us, just go through a list of them. What do we have to be careful of now?
Yeah, so traditionally, buyer-seller messaging communication policies have always been very vague, right? They haven't really put too much like do's and don'ts, right? Especially the don'ts are like, they don't really make it clear. And there's just been a lot of questions surrounding whether or not, you know, can I do this? Can I do that? And then starting last year, a lot of sellers been hit with these 30-day proactive suspensions, which basically prevents them from sending messages, initiating messages out to the buyers. And then, you know, the sellers are going to seller support and saying, hey, what did I do wrong? And the problem is seller support sends them this like this list of like 10 different things that you could have possibly done wrong. And then most of the time they have no idea. So I think there's been a lot of pressure on Amazon to try to, you know, rewrite things and make things more clear. So finally they came out on, I think, September 8th or something about, and they said that, hey, you know, we've updated our policies. We're stating a whole bunch of things now, and we are giving you guys till, November 3rd. Yeah, November 3rd to comply with these changes. So the main things is they're basically saying that, hey, good news is you are allowed to use buyer-seller messaging. You are allowed to use third-party apps from the app stores, and you can send proactive messages. However, it has to follow under these reasons, right? It has to be, you know, resolving an issue with order fulfillment, asking additional information required to complete the order, asking return-related questions, sending an invoice. They did make it clear you can request a product review or seller feedback. So that's a big one, right? Because a lot of sellers are saying, hey, I don't know if I can still use buyer-seller messaging to ask for product reviews. So they made it clear you can, right? Scheduling delivery for heavy or bulky items, or scheduling home service appointment, verifying custom design, or any other contact that is required for the buyer to receive the purchase. So they made it very clear these are the only reasons why you want to send proactive messages. Now, you can always respond via buyer-seller messaging if the buyer reaches out to you first, right? If the buyer reaches out to you and asks you a question, then you can answer the question. It doesn't have to follow these guidelines, but mainly they're trying to define what you can send to the buyer without them initiating contact with you. So that's kind of the main things that they've came out and said, like the high level. But the problem is, okay, so once you send a proactive message out, they've also, you know, came up with a whole bunch of restrictions about what kind of messages you can't send, right? Or what you can put inside your template, right? So they don't want you sending messages for like order and shipping confirmations. And I know that's one big thing that a lot of sellers were doing, was they were sending out that initial email and basically asking buyers if they had any issues with the product before they get it. Please contact me if you have any questions, right? Here's your tracking number. So they don't want you doing that anymore, because they basically saying, hey, we're sending this out already, and it's just too many messages to the buyers, and you know, they just don't want to burden the buyer. So no messages saying thank you or if you have any problems. Definitely no marketing, promotional messages, sending coupons. Language that's incentivizing them to leave a positive review or in exchange for compensation like money or gift cards, discounts, right? Asking them to remove a review or update an existing product review, or like asking them if they can leave a review if they had a good experience. So if you're using buyer-seller messaging to ask for reviews, you have to be very careful on the way you're asking for reviews. It can't be like, if you had a if you loved our product, could you leave us a review? And Amazon will see that as incentivizing, right? Or if you had any problems with your product, please contact us. We'll do everything we can to make you happy, right? Before you leave a review, right? So basically,
but what about, Henson, what about if you want to make it right? So can you just put, without saying leave a review, but just please feel free to contact us if you have any issues or something along those lines.
Yeah, so that you can't really do that, right? Because they're saying they define the following reasons where you can send a proactive message, right? So that kind of message doesn't fall under any of those reasons. I'm talking about
like on an initial message, right? So if you're sending out a message and you're just talking about leaving one line saying, basically showing that you're going to take care of your customer, is that no longer allowed?
So it depends on the initial message you're sending, right? What is that? First of all, there's two issues here. What is that initial message regarding, right? That initial message that you're sending out has to follow one of the reasons why you can send it out. However, like let's say you're asking for a product review or seller feedback, you are allowed to put a line at the bottom saying, if you have any questions or concerns or issues of our product, please feel free to contact us, right? That's okay because that's not incentivizing them to leave you a review, right? You're just giving them a mechanism saying, you can, if you reply to this email, I'll be able to answer your questions. That's totally okay. But if you write it where, if you have any questions, if you have any issues with your product, please contact me before you leave a review, or please contact me first, right? And then, you know, if you have a condition where you want them to try to divert them outside to fix the problem, then that's an issue. So that's, like I said, the language part is very tricky. Yeah.
Well, what about so I bought a shelf and I had to put it together. And I mean, I can't even hammer a nail. So I need to find instructions. Mm-hmm. Is it possible to send a link in an email now for instructions on how to put this shelf together?
Yes, you can. So one of the things that they do allow you to do is add attachments and external links, but they have to be secure. So they have to be HTTPS, right? And it has to be necessary for the order completion, right? So for example, in your case, maybe there's some special way for you to use that hammer or nail, right? And they might not know how to use it before they get the product, or there could be a safety issue or safety concern when they open their product. In that case, you can put an attachment, right? So you can send an initial email and say, by the way, here's the product instructions for using this product, and it's due to the safety of, due to your own safety, right? So things like that is okay, right? Warranty information, product instruction, or invoices, it's fine. You can send that out. But don't try to get too crafty and try to, like, you know, if you're selling, like, if you're selling like exercise equipment and you're attaching not product instructions, but here's 7 exercises to help you lose weight, right? That's not considered something that's necessary to complete the order. And Amazon doesn't want you attaching things like that. So it has to be related to the product itself. And you have to use kind of your own judgment to see, all right, is this something important enough for me to send it to them? Or is this something that it's like common sense where anyone can just use it, right? So this is what Amazon's going to look at when they investigate their messaging, right? If you get flagged and then they start looking into your attachments and say, well, this is not really necessary to send out, then you're going to get in trouble. So make sure you send something that's actually important and something that's pertaining to the product.
Okay, and I interrupted you. Are there any other changes in the policy?
Yeah, so there's a lot of changes. I mean, so one of the things they also want you to do is, the biggest change I would say is that they only want you to send one review request per order. And this is very important because back in the days, people were sending like 2, 3, 4 review requests staggered over, a month, right? Constantly hounding them for reviews. So now they said, all right, we're cutting this down to one, right? So you only get one chance now. And after one, you can't send anymore. And this also pertains to seller feedback. So it's not just product reviews and seller feedback. You have to, if you're going to ask for seller feedback and you want to ask for product review, you put in the same email. You can't separate it out and can't send one product review and then one seller feedback request. What I usually recommend is that when you sell on Amazon, it's very clear which one you need, right? If you're doing retail arbitrage, you probably want seller feedback, right? Because you're selling products that everyone is selling, right? You don't care too much about the reviews. If you're a private label seller, you only care about product reviews. So I would say just target either product reviews or seller feedback for whatever, you know, products you're selling. That way you're going to maximize your opportunity to get the most reviews or the highest conversions. Some of the other changes are more nitty-gritty things about styling, right? Links, opt-outs. Another big one is tracking pixels or images, right? So they actually don't want you putting any more images inside the emails anymore, unless it's your logo, right? So they're okay with you putting attachments, they're okay with you putting your logo, but they don't want you putting things like animated GIFs or pictures of your product, right? So images was another big issue they wanted to get rid of. Of course, no email addresses or phone numbers, and the rest of them is more styling, right? So styling is like, they don't want you to use HTML to try to, like, you know, mess up the margins or the width or using too many fonts or different colors, right? And they also got a little bit technical on like two line breaks, right? Spelling errors and grammar issues. I don't know how they're going to really enforce some of these little things, but just watch out for it, right? You don't want to have like these obvious spelling or grammar issues, but I'm sure if you had one or two, it's not the end of the world, right?
But that doesn't look too good for you anyways if you have a spelling mistake on an email going out.
Exactly, right? It doesn't look professional. And the other big one is the buyer's preferred language. So they also made it clear that if you're selling, let's say, if I'm selling in US, obviously everyone's going to be in English. But if I'm selling in, let's say, Mexico, their buyer's preferred language could be Spanish, right? Or if I'm selling in France, it could be French, right? So they want you to send out that email in that language, not in English, right? So that becomes more of a burden on the software provider you're using, or you know, figuring out, all right, what's the buyer's preferred language, and do you have the template to send that out, right? So be aware that if you're selling international marketplaces, make sure you craft templates in that language as well, because Amazon does require you to send out these messages in the buyer's preferred language.
So if you're in Canada, can you send it out? I've never really, I'm not selling in Canada. I mean, I live in Canada, but I don't sell in Canada. Can you send out a bilingual email?
That's a good question. They haven't really made it clear, but it sounds to me they just want it in one language. So buyers prefer language. So there's preferred language means there's only one, right? It's not like I have three preferred languages. So I think as a buyer in Amazon, you have a way to set what language you want to, you know, get your communications in, right? And as a seller, I don't think you have access to know, you know, if you're just using buyer seller messaging and just sending out messages by yourself through Seller Central, I don't think there's a way right now to detect which way it is. However, for software providers, there is a way for us to see that. So we can see based on your orders, this order has a preferred language or Spanish, right? So when we send out the emails, we have to make sure that the email template you're sending out is in Spanish. Otherwise, we're going to block it and say, hey, don't send this out, because if you send it out in the wrong language, you're going to get in trouble.
Okay. So just one sec here, just a shout out to Faye and Michelle Worthy. Faye, you had a question here. Kelsey, can we run through a couple of the questions?
Yep. So we got three questions lined up, if you guys don't mind. I think you guys might have touched on this already, but how would Amazon know that the insert cards are the same across all channels?
Like I said earlier, I've heard that they do these test buys. So they will figure out where else your product's selling, and they might purchase the products just to see what it looks like. But I can't confirm that because, you know, they've never made that clear, but I've heard from, you know, some sellers that that's what they do. So,
okay, great. From Marina, can I give a link to YouTube video on my branded channel with installation instructions if a customer contacted me?
Yes, you can. Yeah. So if it's if it's the actual video of the actual installation instructions, then yes, it's okay. Yeah.
Okay, and we've got a big one from Victor. We receive many seller feedbacks that are actually 5-star product reviews. We used to send the buyers a message asking them to leave a product review instead, but stopped for obvious reasons last year. What is your opinion on this? Do you agree this is a prudent decision?
Yeah, so that's the thing. It's kind of sad how, you know, Amazon doesn't just move those over, right, for you. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of sellers were trying to get the buyers to move it over, but they don't want you contacting them to, you know, move the review. So that's something you can't really do anymore. Now, I don't know what kind of messages you're sending. Were you sending an email that had both seller feedback and product review links inside? Or was there some confusion about why they were leaving seller feedback or product reviews and seller feedback section? So I think the only thing you can really do is just make sure that if your goal is to get product reviews, just send product review emails out, right? With the seller feedback, there's not much you can really do about it. I mean, you probably won't get too many of them. I don't know. You might be able to bend the rules a little bit. I mean, you can reach out to them and ask, but with the new proactive guidelines, it really doesn't say you can do that. So I would be careful about doing that. But if it's like once in a while, then, you know, you might be able to fly under the radar, but, you know, yeah. I wouldn't risk it. Yeah.
Yes, Jay says no links provided to the seller feedback folks.
So I've had that issue come up, and my partner on AMZ and Beyond, we talk about this once in a while. He has no problem doing that, and he's never had a problem. I've had a brand that was a client, had a bunch that came in, but it was selling there was a ton of product moving every day. We ended up telling people in a nice way, oh, you know, you left a feedback review and that should be more about the product itself, the product delivery, not the product itself, but the delivery, the customer experience. Would you mind, and, you know, asking them to leave the review, take that, put it over there. We got suspended. So when we did talk to Amazon about that, that was the reason. Now, you're not allowed to do that. We got the account back. Everything was cool. But it was like the slap on the wrist, just letting us know that we shouldn't do that. That's one of the only times I've ever heard of anybody getting a suspension. But again, this guy was moving on a lot of product. And maybe if it's a smaller account, or I just don't know how seriously they're taking it right now. But anyways, it did happen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, once Amazon flags your account, they're going to look into pretty much everything you're sending out, right? And if any of the things that you're doing is, you know, against their terms of service, yeah, they will slap you with that 30-day suspension. So so the biggest thing is, yeah, like a lot of people ask, like, what are the consequences of violating these new communication guidelines, right? So first offense, you're going to get 30-day proactive email restriction. So you can't initiate contact with the buyers anymore. But you can always respond to them. So if someone asks you a question about customer service or whatever, you can always respond, right? If you have like something where it's necessary to complete the order, like for example, like a scheduling a delivery for your product, you can still send proactive messages. However, you have to use that important tagline in the subject line to get through that. So you can still send critical messages. And it doesn't impact your ability to sell on Amazon, right? This is just basically restricting you from using buyer-seller messaging to send out proactive messages. So in all honesty, like, it's not really the end of the world if you get hit with one of these rules. However, if you get hit the second time, they will permanently ban you from sending proactive emails. So you still want to be careful about doing a lot of these things, right? And you have to kind of weigh like, all right, how important is sending proactive emails out, right? Because it's very important prior to last year, because this is pretty much the only way you can ask for reviews. However, Amazon did release that new request a review button, right? Which Amazon triggered, which you can press the button and Amazon will send out their own email to ask for reviews and feedback. And that would always work no matter where, it doesn't matter if you got hit with, you know, proactive email restriction. This is a separate mechanism. So you don't have to worry about like, oh, I can never get reviews anymore, right? However, I don't know, we give it time to see which method yields, you know, the highest conversions, right? A lot of sellers with brands, right? They can put in their logos, they can send attachments, like they see a lot of value of using buyer-seller messaging to send out emails versus using request to rebund. So I would definitely still be very conscientious about following the guidelines overall, because you don't want to get hit with that permanent ban.
Okay, Kelsey, were there some more comments or questions?
Yeah, we have a couple of comments and a few questions. So Marina, about the French, I do reply in two languages to customers in Quebec and apologize that my French is not good. We've got a shout out from Faye. Thanks. And a huge shout out to Norman for the amazing Facebook Lives.
You're welcome.
We have one from Forensic Detectors. What about customers sending sellers messages? Has this changed recently?
What about customers sending seller messages? Customers can always send seller messages. There's no, Amazon doesn't care about what, you know, buyers send to sellers, right? Because as a seller, your goal is to provide customer support, right? Especially if the buyer reaches out to you. So there's no restriction on their end, as long as they don't send you anything that's like threatening or demeaning or anything like that. If it's something pertaining to the product itself, then yeah, they can send you whatever they want, right? They can ask you any questions they want, and your goal, your job is to, you know, resolve the issue if there's an issue.
Okay. And if you don't mind just clarifying for Michelle, she was a little late to the podcast today. Can you just talk about inserts? Is there anything changing specifically about inserts?
There hasn't been anything released about inserts. It's pretty much the same rules. However, you know, with some of these are very common sense, right? If you're saying like, if they're telling you communication guidelines, that's kind of like including inserts, right? So if you don't want to have your insert saying, if you had a great experience, could you leave me a 5-star review, right? That same type of policy also, you know, goes to inserts as well. So yeah, just use common sense, right? If it sounds fishy to you, or you feel like, you know, you're going to get in trouble, like just don't do it.
All right. And our last comment so far is from Victor. The only time we use buyer seller messages these days is to immediately send a single message to someone who has returned a product, asking them for the reason of the return and hopefully ward off a bad review. Do you think this is a legit use of the system?
Yeah, so I would say don't do that either, because that's one of the things where Amazon doesn't want you to send a message to them about. However, if it depends on the channel you're selling on, right? If you're doing FBA, they want you to be pretty much hands off, because the return is all handled by Amazon, right? Now, if you're doing FBM, right? Fulfillment by merchant, then in the case where you have to process the return, you have to process the refund, then you can reach out to them and, you know, communicate with them, right? So FBM and FBA rules are slightly different, right? Because for FBM, there's certain things where you might have to send an invoice, or you might have to send some kind of confirmation for shipping, right? So yeah, for FBA, I wouldn't do that anymore, because that's not something Amazon is allowing you to do anymore.
Daddy overtook something for me.
Ellie, come on, call me. Go outside, okay?
Overtook
something. Yeah, my daughter. I don't know why she's in here, but here, come here. Bye.
Hey, I love when that happens. She left. Let her say hi.
And then she left. You want to come here?
Come
here. We're on the call. Here.
All right.
Say hi, Ellie.
Hi.
Say hi. Say hi.
Hi.
Okay.
Hi.
Okay. Bye-bye.
That's why I love doing live.
That's actually the first time this happened. Actually, she's been pretty good about it, but I don't know, today.
Yeah, that's great when that happens. My dog just knocked over my lights in the back. I don't know if you saw me doing this when I was off camera trying to set them up again, but yeah. Oh, the fun of live. Hey, one of the other questions I have, you have a bad review. So somebody comes on and, you know, it's a legit review. It's no smear campaign. Something happened and you're trying to make it right. They come up with, you know, Amazon seller or some bogus name. Is there any way to track that person down that you know of? I mean, I know you could before, but that got blocked. Is there, and you're legitimately trying to solve the issue. You're like, for me, I'll just put, you know, try to contact us. Like, I'll try to respond to the review and ask them to contact us, but it hardly ever happens. Is there a way that you could reach out to these people? Anything nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, back in the days, we had the mechanism to do it, right? Yeah. There was a way inside the product reviews that had an identification that we could match the order ID, and then we actually had the way to completely automate that process. But Amazon took it away, and our understanding when we spoke with Amazon is they really want buyer or sellers to stay away from buyers, like, completely. They don't want you harassing them, because to them it's more of a legal issue, right? If they have any way to identify the reviewers, then it's a liability on Amazon, right? Because reviews are supposed to be anonymous and they have to protect the buyer's identity, right? So yeah, they pretty much cut off every type of mechanism for you to detect who the actual buyer is. Unless you have, you know, some black hat stuff where you have, you know, internal Amazon employees, and that's a separate topic, right? That's very different here. But as a normal seller, there's no way you could figure out who it is. When you get a negative review, the best thing you can do these days really is to comment on the review itself. Like on the Amazon review page where they wrote it, there's a way to write a comment. You log in as your manufacturer, and they do allow you to write, you know, address the issue and also say, please contact us through like buyer seller messaging. You know, if you have any issues, we can help you resolve it. Right. Now, the question is, well, how effective is that? Well, it's not that effective in terms of, you know, if you want the buyer to remove the review or respond back to you, because they don't get a notification about it. Right. And it's unlikely they're going to come back and read the review that they left. Right. Once you leave a review, you're done. Right. You're usually never going to come back and read it again. Mm-hmm. Now, the value is that if you respond quickly enough, right, and you have other customers that are researching your product, figuring out whether or not I should buy or not, this gives them more confidence that, hey, the manufacturer responded in a timely manner and they've reached out saying that they're going to take care of the issue, right? So it shows as a seller that you're very responsible for your product and your customer service, and it'll give confidence for prospective future buyers to come and purchase your product, since, you know, these days everyone's reading negative reviews more than they read positive reviews. So yeah, that's pretty much all you can do. Yeah.
Right. You mentioned something earlier on too, and if you're newer to Amazon, we might have just skipped over it a little too quickly, that if it is something that's important to send a message, I don't know about square brackets anymore, but it used to be square bracket, all upper caps, import and square bracket, and then in the subject line. So just to make that clear, you need to put the word important in the subject line, and then, you know, whatever the subject is, when you're reaching out to them. So just wanted to make that clear to anybody that's new to Amazon and messaging.
Yeah. So the important subject line is, yeah, you don't really want to use it unless you have something important, critical to send out, because there's another bunch of rules about, you know, critical messages. So they absolutely allow you to send critical messages if you have to, right? But otherwise, don't try to bypass the opt-out.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about that, because today we're talking about communication and critical messaging. Can you give us, you know, a couple of reasons why people would have to send a critical message with that important in the subject line?
Yeah. So let's say I had a product where, I don't know, it's extremely heavy, right? And it requires, you know, multiple people to carry it inside the house, right? Then I might want to give warning to the buyer that, hey, by the way, you know, this is not something that you could bring in yourself. You might want to, you know, call up a friend or have some help, right? Or let's say I'm selling like a collar for your dog, and it's a customized collar that I'm going to print the dog's name on there, right? I can't complete the order unless they give me the name, right? So unless they respond back to me, I can't complete the order, right? So I have to use this critical message to to be able to communicate with them, right? So these kind of scenarios, you want to use it. But if you're sending a critical message because you want to send them a PDF instruction on how to use a product, but it's not really, you know, it's something that's pretty common sense, then I would say avoid it, right?
Right.
But if it's instructions where, you know, maybe it's time sensitive, maybe you're selling something that's perishable or, you know, that could jeopardize your safety, right? Then I would say, yeah, that's critical. You could send it. So pretty much, yeah, these are kind of some scenarios.
Okay. So to stay compliant, can we just have a quick list or a summary of how do sellers stay compliant?
Yeah, so sellers stays compliant, I would say, basically, yeah, follow the communication guidelines, right? Understand all the, you know, the new things that they're talking about, the don'ts, right? There's a lot of don'ts in there. So I'll definitely don't do any of the don'ts, right? The do's are very little because they don't really write what you can do. It's like you have to kind of reverse engineer and figure out what you can do, right? So I've made it easy. I kind of figure out, all right, what are the do's that you can do, right? So the do's is, okay, you can send attachments, you can put your logo, and you can put in secure working links, right? So if you're asking for a review, you can take them to Amazon to leave a review. But the don'ts, just don't do any of that stuff, right? And you should be okay with, you know, not getting flagged. And the biggest thing, like I mentioned earlier, was don't send more than one review request per order. So
right.
a lot of people that are getting the restriction is mostly because of that. And okay. And the bigger issue is that with the new review request review button that came out, they are using both, right? They're using buyer seller messaging as review, and then they're triggering the review request. So Amazon will actually view that as two review requests per order. So you definitely don't want to do that either. So you got to figure out which one is more effective for you, right? If you want to use buyer seller messaging, don't use the review request button, right? And vice versa.
Okay, that's an important point. So yeah, I could easily have done that. So the review, request a review button, you want to leave it alone, make your decision if you're going to go with a third party app like Feedback is. All right. So can you give a few strategies on how to maximize feedback or product reviews?
Yeah. So I would say first figure out, like, you know, if you're FBA or FBM, right? If you're FBA, then you obviously want product reviews, right? If you're FBM, then you're probably more geared towards seller feedback, right? So if you're sending out these messages, make sure that you're only targeting one of them, right? Don't put both of them in the same email because most likely they're not going to click on both links, right? They're only going to click on one of the links. Now, the other strategy is that Amazon gives you a time window on when you can ask for reviews and feedback, right? And using the review request button, they basically set that between 5 and 30 days, right? And with the buyer seller messaging, they give you up to 30 days, right? So you might, if you're just starting selling on Amazon, you might have one product. So it might not matter to you too much on whether or not you want to set up multiple like campaigns. So what I mean is, like, every product has a evaluation window, right? And that window is very critical on whether or not the buyer had a chance to evaluate the product. You know, if you ask the review too early, then there's a very good chance they're not going to leave your review, right? If you ask a review too late, maybe they forgot about your product or they don't care. So you got to figure out, like, okay, for each product, how long is it going to take, like, average buyer to use it, test it, and then be able to write something about it, right? So if you're selling multiple products, like if you're selling toys, if you're selling supplements, or selling electronics, these different categories might have different timing, right? So you don't want to ask for a review if you're selling vitamins after 5 days, right? Obviously, like, you know, people need maybe 20 days or 30 days to figure out if it's working or not, right? Before they can leave your review. So the best thing is, yeah, make sure you understand your product's request window, right? And then sending them out at the right time. Also, Amazon did say that, doesn't say anything about, like, you can't exclude different types of orders to send it to, right? So obviously you don't want to be sending review requests to people who refunded your product, returned your product, maybe left you a negative feedback, right? So you want to try to figure out, okay, can I identify these type of orders that had problems, right? Or let's say a buyer reached out to you and just cussed you out really angry. Like you don't want to send, you obviously don't want to send a review to them, right? So figure out how to kind of filter these guys out so you can increase your positive reviews, right? So that's that's very important. But other than that, these days, I mean, the thing is, you have to, like, deciding which mechanism you use, review request or buyer side messaging. Review request, there's not much you really need to do except for figuring out the timing, right? Because Amazon sends out their own subject line email, their own templates, right? It's just generic. Everyone's going to get the same thing. Now, buyer-seller messaging, you have a little bit more flexibility because you can put your custom subject line, you can write your own personalized message, you can put in your logo, you can put attachments. So there's a little bit more strategy using buyer-seller messaging. The subject line is the most important thing, right? Whether or not they're going to open your email. And now with the pixel tracking disappearing, which basically means that you can't see open rates anymore, which is a big issue. You really have to figure out, all right, which subject lines are actually going to perform the best, right? And I would say people always ask me what subject line works the best. And the best subject lines are regarding your Amazon order ID with the order ID number or information about your Amazon order ID with the order ID number. That's always going to get you very high open rates. And the reason for that is it's something about Amazon, something about the order. It sounds kind of important, but you don't really give too much detail about what that email content is about. And that's pretty much the mechanism of why they would open it. Now, if you're writing a subject line that says, could you please rate my transaction or could you please review my product, and which is kind of what Amazon uses, you'll notice that open rates are much lower, right? And that's mainly because you're giving too much information before them opening the email. And a lot of times people might be busy, right? Depending on when you're sending out the email, they might not be interested in opening at that time. And if they skip it, they might never come back, right? Or they're just not interested at, you know, opening at all because it's asking for a review, right? Now, if you can get them to open the email, then that's where you kind of have to use a little bit of more personalized message to try to get them to convert. And back in the days, you know, when emails are pretty much Wild Wild West where you can put whatever in there. There's so many different strategies using pictures, emojis, you know, animate GIFs. You can really try to capture attention. But now Amazon's saying you can't put pictures, you can't put emojis. Now it's more towards, all right, how can I just get to the point, write something personal yet convincing, and then see if they'll, you know, write a review for me. So there's not too much strategies anymore. Just, I would say the best thing to do is just keep it short. Keep it a little bit personal, and then, you know, ask in a very nice way, to nice and neutral way for review. And that's pretty much all you can do.
Right. So, and one of the things you're talking about, the subject lines, you could go to Usability Hub or PicFu and ask people to rate your subject line. And it's not so much on the engagement side, but you can ask the question, which has the most curiosity, or something along those lines. And so, you know, what would get your attention, and give them three to take a look at, and you'll get your answer right away within about 5 minutes of which email that you could use or lead with. It's just an option, and it's very inexpensive to do. Yes, Kel.
We have two more questions. We're almost at the hour mark.
Okay.
So for Marina, if a customer contacts us with a question and mentions how much they love our product, can I ask them to leave a review in this situation?
Yeah, you definitely can. I mean, I don't see why you can't, as long as you only ask them once, right? So if you're using an email automation tool, make sure you don't send that second email out. If you're responding to them and saying, hey, by the way, could you leave us a review, and then put the link in there, that's totally okay, right? You're not incentivizing to leave a review. Just make sure you don't send the second one to them.
Okay. Hey, Henson, but if you send a review back or a message back saying, oh, I'm so happy that you love our product, mm-hmm. Is that an issue? Would you leave a review?
Well, I wouldn't say it's an issue because you're not the one that initiated contact, right? The customer came and contacted you first saying they loved your product. And you're just responding to them saying that, hey, I'm happy you love my product. Could you leave a review? Now, if you really paranoid, then don't put that in there. Just say like, oh, that's great. You know, I love, thanks for the feedback. Can you leave me a review? Then, you know, you shouldn't have a problem. But I really doubt Amazon is going to nitpick to that point where they're going to say, oh, by the way, you had this, you know, language in there. They're more nitpicky about you sending this message to all your orders, right? If you're doing this in bulk or in mass, that's where the problem comes in. If it's once in a while here and there, like, you know, it's probably fine. You know?
Okay.
All right. And then our last question, this I guess will be the last one of the day. Should you always request a review?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Amazon's giving sellers a way to ask for reviews, right? And they've made it clear with these new communication policies that you can ask for reviews. You can use buyer seller messaging, right? They are allowing you to do it. And reviews, getting reviews now versus getting reviews back in 2015 is completely different. It's so much harder to get reviews. Amazon has done so many things to try to prevent, you know, false reviews or fake reviews, right? So if they're giving you a free right to ask for review, like you gotta maximize the opportunity. There's no reason not to ask for review, right? So definitely use, you know, either buyer seller messaging or use the review request button to ask for a review.
I got a question. So on the review side, this has happened to a couple products that we've just had really great listings and people have left reviews. And then all of a sudden you start seeing 50 reviews being deleted, 100 reviews being deleted. And we're not, these are all quality buys. They're not going out there and we're trying to get a, like through rebates, put it that way. So they're not lower quality buys. These are just people that are buying the product on a regular basis. And all of a sudden, and big, sometimes like we've seen 300 reviews just removed. Is there anything that we can do to go back to Amazon and say, hey, these are all real?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's different scenarios of why they would delete those reviews. I mean, it could be fraud within Amazon, right? As we know, there's a lot of fishy stuff going internally, right? Two, it could just be they may have misdetected those reviews as fake reviews, possibly, right? Or even though it's not, right? So the best thing I would say is, you know, open a case with them and then having a way to prove that these reviews are there. Because sometimes, as I heard internally, like if someone has enough power, they can wipe out the review out of the existence from Amazon, right? And they have to, like, some of these guys internally might not have the ability to backtrack and see, all right, these reviews used to be here and they're gone. A lot of our customers have feedback, but since we have the review management system, like once we grab the reviews that come into our system, like they're always stored in our system. So you'll be able to see the history of the review forever. You can download the whole thing in the CSV file and you have a record of it. So then a lot of sellers, like I think the review deletion started happening last year. So they were opening cases with seller support and saying, here's a PDF of, you know, 50 reviews that used to be here and they disappeared. Like, can you tell me what happened? Right. So at least you have something to show that I had 50 reviews and these are reviews in question. Why aren't they here? They can look at that. And then from that information, you know, they can at least support your case a little bit better. So the actual reason of review deletion, I don't know. It could be many factors, but if you have something to support that these reviews are here before, it makes your case a lot stronger.
So you have something that tracks the history. I wish I knew about this earlier because we do this all manually. We take the review URL and we copy it and we put it into a note. So
our review management system is awesome. Like you can. All the reviews come in by time. We grab it every 4 hours. You have a way to look at all the reviews that come in or only reviews by the ASIN. You could sort, filter, 1-star, 5-star, whatever you want to see. We have a labeling and note system inside. So, you know, you could write notes about the review saying that, hey, I already responded, or you can label them and say, these are reviews that have issues that we need to address. We have keyword detection for reviews. So we'll figure out like, all right, these are the most commonly used keywords in the last week about your review. So like if this is broken, if this is damaged, if this is sucks, you'll be able to identify that right away, right? So there's a lot of functionality in using software, especially, you know, monitoring reviews, because, you know, if you have, once you start selling a lot of products, there's no way you can monitor all of these products every single day, right? And like I said, you want to respond to them as fast as possible.
Right. So we've hit the hour now. Do you have enough time for two more questions?
Yeah. Go for it.
Okay, absolutely. Perfect. Kelsey.
Okay. Yep. Two more questions. So anyone from the audience, if we don't get to them now, maybe you guys can go through the comments and reply afterwards.
Yep.
But forensic detectors, what about review edits from customers? I had a situation, got 1 star, fixed problem. Customer is happy, but customer couldn't change their original rating. Any thoughts?
That's interesting. Usually they can change the rating, because if they go back to the original review link where they left the review, it does allow you to update the review. So I'm wondering why that was a problem. I don't know. It could be a technical issue on Amazon, but I definitely know that, you know, you can delete your review or update it. So,
okay. And then our last one is from Marina. Can you tell us more about FeedbackWiz? Do you have templates?
Yeah. So FeedbackWiz, you know, the main tool when we first launched was the email mediation part, buyer seller messaging emails, a lot of functionality around it. But with these new communication policies, you know, things have toned down a lot. However, we have to provide sellers some updates, where some of the things that they've made it clear is that we have to provide the 17-digit order ID number inside the emails, right? We have to detect the buyer's preferred language. So these are all things that we're doing right now to update our software to be compliant by November 3rd. As in templates, yeah, we have a bunch of templates that we're currently working on. I think by next week, we'll have an update with templates that we think are going to be 100% TOS compliant. I do speak with Amazon, like internally asking questions, you know, that are kind of vague about communication policies. So we have pretty good insight on how much we can stretch, you know, some of these rules, right, to a way where you're not going to get in trouble. However, you still want to be effective, right? So, yeah, I think by next week, we have pre-built templates. We'll have language translation for, right now we have 13 different marketplaces. I think maybe only like 6 or 7 of them have different languages, but we'll have the translated languages as well. So, and yeah, with FeedbackWiz, you can automate everything, right? You can choose if you want to use buyer seller messaging or if you want to use the review request button, right? We can trigger the review request button automatically in Seller Central, so you don't need like a Chrome extension. It's done directly through Amazon API. You know, you can schedule different timings for different products, right? So if you had toys, like I said, you could say, hey, send out a review request 5 days after, or send out, you know, 30 days after for supplements, right? If you have product instructions with attachments, you can use buyer seller messaging to send that out first after shipment. You have ways to exclude products, right? So, you know, returns, refunds, like we get all that data. So for all the data for your orders, we have all that information, whether or not that's feedback, whether or not they use a coupon code, promotion, you know, all that information we can use to help you guys maximize your conversions for reviews.
Okay, very good. So how do people find your app?
Just go to www.feedbackwiz.com.
Okay. Yep. Oh, yeah. I just see Kelsey put it in the comments as well. All right. I think I took up a lot more time than what what was thought of for Henson. Anyways, how do people get a hold of you?
You could just email me, Henson, H-E-N-S-O-N, at feedbackwiz.com.
Very good.
If you have any questions, just email me. If you have questions about the app itself or support-related questions, just email support@feedbackwiz.com. And if you have questions about how to use the app, you can go to support.feedbackwiz.com. And we have all the guides and videos on, you know, all the questions you might have on setting things up or how to, you know, do things. So
Okay, very good. So, Henson, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast today. There was a lot more to this than I thought. Learned a lot from the new communication policy. So thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. All right, everybody. So I hope you enjoyed the podcast today. Remember, we're going to be posting this episode along with other content and other video clips on Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy. And also, if you want to see the visual, the video, YouTube channel, go to Norm Farrar, where we not only have the full episodes, but we also have a bunch of repurposed content, exactly like Hanny Morrow said on the last episode. But you can check that out on our YouTube channel. Kelsey.
All right, I'm here. Hello, everyone. Hope everyone enjoyed the show. So yeah, as Norm said, if you are interested, if you maybe missed out on the first half of the episode, you can always go to YouTube. Our channel is just Norm Farrar, and you can find all of the latest, every single episode that we've ever done, going back till I think April. The full clips are there. We release shortened clips too throughout. And if you haven't already, please like and share this. We are also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So you just search Lunch with Norm and you'll be able to find us. And I see Marina. Thank you for watching. We appreciate it.
Hey, thank you.
We have Scott Letourneau. Great insights on reviews and what has changed and is currently possible. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
And Dr. Kaz, Norm and Kelsey, great job. Awesome. Thanks. Thank you for watching. We appreciate you coming back and tuning in. Also, I didn't run this past you, Norm.
Oh, God. What are you going to do?
I was thinking that we should have like a little name for fans of Lunch with Norm. So to the audience, if you have any suggestions for like a name for you guys that we can
name
call
for
you.
The community?
A name for the community. Let us know in the comments. I think it'd be fun. and if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can always email me. I'll throw my email in. I love
what about a name for Kelsey? How's that?
But if you have any feedback you guys want to give us or advice, we'd love to hear. So I'll throw my email into the comments here, k@lunchwithnorm.com. And Victor, thank you for tuning in. And I think that's it for me.
All right.
You squeezed in enough.
Yeah, you squeezed it enough. All right, so on Monday, we're going to be talking to my business partner in Honu Worldwide, Afolabi Orokan, and he's going to be discussing fourth quarter, just what you can do, some low-cost 3PL solutions. And let me see, I think that is absolutely it. There we go. So stay tuned for Lunch with Norm every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at noon Eastern Standard Time. I don't think there's any Thursday episodes scheduled. We're back to Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So everybody, thanks again. I really appreciate you joining us today on Lunch with Norm. Lunch with Norm.